call Senate State Affairs to order on the 28th, I think, and just 9 o'clock. And present we have Vice Chair Geisel, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Coghill, and myself, Chair Dyson. Our agenda today is SB 73, the property tax exemption for military widows or widowers, HCR 4, the Hmong American Veterans Day, and under previously heard SB 45, the tax exemption for certain vehicles. Who is here to present SB 73?
Good morning, Chair Dyson, committee members. For the record, my name is Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. He should be on his way shortly, or he should be on his way now. You have before you Senate Bill 73, which provides a property tax exemption for widows and widowers of military service members. This bill came about because a constituent of Senator Meyer's, Teresa Dayton, and you have a letter of her support in your packet. She lost her husband in the military service, and she worked very hard with the municipality of Anchorage over the past couple of years to pass an ordinance that would allow for an exemption on the first $150,000 of property taxes for U.S. military service members' surviving spouses. That proposition, which was Proposition 7, passed with overwhelming support, which was nearly 80% of the voters, in April of 2012. However, a caveat to the ordinance is that it can't take effect until the legislature amends this particular statute, which is 2945030E. SB 73 attempts to amend that statute so that the municipality ordinance can take effect and so that any other municipality can do the same.
Good morning. And for the record, let the record reflect Senator Meyer has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry I'm late.
No. That's fine. Please continue.
Okay. This measure is intended to support the families of our service members who die while serving their country and to help them stay in the state of Alaska where they and their families have established their lives. It's important to note that this bill is not an unfunded mandate. It simply allows municipalities the statutory language needed to provide this exemption should they hold an election and should their voters approve that measure. There's a zero fiscal note from DCCED. There's no expense to the state. It is a burden that municipalities who their voters have chosen would bear that fiscal responsibility. There was a CS in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and I can walk you through the changes between the original bill and the CS if you would like.
Let's, for the record, adopt the CS. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that this committee adopt the CS for Senate Bill 73, version N.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the CS for Senate Bill 73 is adopted. Please continue.
Okay, our original bill, 73, was modeled on previous legislation. As I mentioned before, the constituent of ours had attempted to get legislation through in prior legislatures. And so we originally took that legislation that she had been working on and just attempted to go with that original wording. However, we soon realized that there was a mistake in that original bill. We didn't intend to limit the exemption to those 60 years and older. We didn't want to put an age limit on the exemption, mainly because our active duty soldiers who are giving their lives serving their countries, many of them are, of course, less than 60 years old, and they're leaving behind younger families. So we didn't want that age cap on there. The CS also tightened up the language of what it means to be killed while serving in the military. The original bill used that particular language, killed while serving in the military. However, we tightened it up to state We tightened it up to state that it would apply to a member of the Armed Forces of the United States who dies because of illness or injury suffered while serving on active duty service, or complications relating to the treatment of the illness or injury suffered while serving on active duty service of the United States. That language mirrors similar language in another statute, and the Department of Law concurred with us that that would be an easier interpretation should there ever be any question of what that meant. And then finally, we clarified what it means to be a widow or widower while receiving these benefits, so that it's clear that this exemption would not be available upon remarrying.
Yeah, thank you. Take a brief at ease. Senator. Record. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add a few comments. I think my staff did an excellent job of presenting the bill. As far as we know, there's only about five people that would be impacted by this. In other words, fortunately, only five folks had their spouse killed in the line of duty, and hopefully that number doesn't get any bigger. But it amazes me why anybody would even join our armed services, because the life insurance, don't know what it is, but it's not adequate to supply or to provide for the spouse and the children of the one who is killed in the line of duty. So we just felt like this was the right thing to do for those that are out there, fighting on our behalf. The Assembly and the Mayor all supported this. This was my constituent Anchorage that brought it to our attention, and her husband had died in the line of duty, and but they said it needed to go to the vote of the people, so they put it on the ballot, passed very easily, as you know, any property tax exemptions on the ballot don't always pass that easily, because then the rest of us had to pay that much more. But then we heard from the city that they couldn't implement it until they had this bill from the state, basically saying that they could. And again, this is, the cities don't have to do this. This is not a mandate, but it gives them that option.
Do you have in your possession a legal opinion from the city saying that we have to modify the state statutes?
Chair Dyson, it is actually, I believe in your packet, you should have a copy of the ordinance, the Anchorage ordinance. And if you look, let's see here.
Page 7.
The ordinance specifically states that this is subject to authorization by the Alaska State Legislature and voter approval of the ballot proposition. And if I might note, there is a similar statute that currently allows municipalities to exempt property taxes for widows or widowers. Their language of what it means to be killed while serving on active duty is a little bit tighter than what we have. That language specifically states that they must be serving on active duty while eligible for hostile fire or imminent danger pay. Ours doesn't use that specific language. It also is completely optional for any municipality right now to do that. Ours requires a vote of the people, and once the vote of the people allows for that exemption, then the city they must provide it once the voters approve that.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to build a record on some of the terms here. And, excuse me, one of the ones was on active duty service and how that is defined. And so you talked a little bit about it. If you could if you could maybe explain what your thought is on how that's to be defined a little bit more.
Well, I did some research, and actually legislative research did some research for me. Many states define that, well, pretty much all of them define it somewhat differently. We wanted ours to be a little bit broader than what's in the current statute. We didn't necessarily mean for it to include only those who are killed, say, while serving in, you know, for this hostile fire or imminent danger. We wanted it to be able to include, and one example that I heard in my research was if someone was stationed on a base overseas and they happened to contract malaria, for instance, then later on they die from complications of that, I'm not sure that they would be covered under this current statute that's in here. So our language is a little bit broader in that we're including illness or injury suffered while serving on active duty service. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to be in combat.
So if someone is a member of National Guard or Coast Guard, I assume all branches are covered here. National Guard's covered.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
And Mr. Chair, if I could. On the question of illness or injury suffered, is it the way your language reads, who dies because of illness or injury, is that, and I only know this because I used to be a hearing officer and deal with these types of issues, is that 100% was caused, and I'll give you an example. Someone's a smoker and someone is in the military, they're exposed to hazardous substances and they get a lung disease and they die from that. Is it 100% caused by their military service, or is it 50%, or is it 50 plus one? Any thoughts on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we didn't necessarily take it to that level in defining what that meant. The intent was that if they died as a result of an experience of their active duty, I would imagine that if that could be tied back to their service, then I suppose that would be covered. We didn't actually go in that deep.
Is there legal online, Mr. Chair? Maybe I can ask the questions if someone, an attorney, if AG is online.
We will get the Attorney General's office on here in a minute. I would assume that all we're doing is making it possible for the local municipalities and cities, boroughs, to do this, and they can set their criteria as in regulation or whatever they need to do.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We want the municipalities to have the flexibility to put whatever guidelines they want to. We just want to make sure that the state is not hindering them from doing that.
Yeah. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I worked with a member from the other body on a piece of legislation similar to this, but not exactly. But they used the term active duty. And in the process, I discovered that actually active duty and overseas is Alaska. So what you're saying here is illness or injury while serving even in one of our military bases at home. So this is very broad.
Through the chair, that is correct. That is even the intent. And in fact, the constituent of ours who championed the ballot measure in Anchorage, it's my understanding her husband was killed in Alaska.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you for clarifying that.
All right, we'll go to Rachel Witte in the Attorney General's office. Can you hear us, Rachel?
Yes, I can, Chair Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I assume you've been listening to the discussion. Would you like to kind of weigh in on the couple of legal questions that have come up here?
Chair Dyson, Well, I put this caveat. I was on the line. I do represent and advise sometimes the state assessor, but we have another assistant attorney general who advises the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and I haven't looked at this issue about whether or not the cause would need to be a substantial factor or a contributing cause. That would be something I guess we would defer to the sponsor and what the intent was there. But we can look more into that. I don't have an answer on that issue.
And about the issue of whether or not this statute change is needed, do you have an opinion on that?
It's my understanding from the Anchorage ordinance that it is needed. From the language of the Anchorage ordinance that says it's contingent on approval from the legislature.
I don't understand what you just said. Does current statute allow a municipality to make this kind of a relief on property taxes?
The state does not reimburse if it's not one of the categories covered under the statute, which is currently limited to 65 and older, or a disabled vet, or a widow or a widower under 60 of either of the persons, one or two in the section, the 65 or older, the disabled vet, that it wouldn't be covered. And it's my understanding that the municipalities were not able to give this exemption to widows or widowers of someone who was killed because they weren't a disabled vet and they weren't 65 or older. And so they fell through the cracks of the current 2945-030E.
Yeah, I'm looking at section 2945-050, and I always struggle here, but it looks like under the S subparagraph it says, a municipality may, by ordinance, partially or wholly exempt from taxation real property owned and occupied as a permanent place of abode by a resident who is the widow or widower of a member of the armed services injured on active duty. So with that in place, the municipalities at least could have done this for a widow widower subject to those tighter requirements, restrictions in the state code. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that's correct. And again, we also have another assistant attorney general who advises the municipalities on these issues, and I was actually asked to be online to respond to specific questions that have been raised regarding the constitutionality, I can also get back to the committee with any clarification from our municipal attorney here at the AG's office.
Yeah, thank you. Probably not necessary in that this amendment is before us, broadens the scope here, and probably is necessary to accomplish the sponsor's intentions. Senator Giesel, do you have a question?
No, I did not. Thank you.
All right. And any questions of Rachel in the Attorney General's office supporting the assessors, I think? Senator Wilkowski.
There was a statement that there were five. This would affect roughly five people. Is that your understanding? Is that across the state, or is that just at Anchorage? If you know, Rachel?
I think that question, through the chair, I think that question might better be referred to, I know that Marty McGee, the Anchorage assessor, has been online for some of these things. I haven't found out from the state assessor what the impact would be across the state, but it's my understanding that it is relatively minor. Five is the number that I've heard. I've actually heard four, so I think that comports with the impact.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Sponsor, you have something you want to say at this point?
Mr. Chairman, just that number was obtained from the assessor. The number five, or was it four? I guess it doesn't matter. Four or five.
All right.
Is that the, Mr. Chair, is that the statewide, or is that just an Anchorage?
I think that's Anchorage, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Got two, three people that want to testify. The people here in the room that want to testify? Yeah. Kathy, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kathy Wasserman from the Alaska Municipal League. First of all, we appreciate Senator Meyer making this an optional. We believe that most communities want to help the widows and widowers and can, if they feel they are financially able, to grant this exemption if the voters feel that way. My question was the same as yours under 2945-050S. If that wasn't already in place. In fact, this 2945-050S is actually broader than this new bill in that it allows a municipality to partially or wholly exempt from taxation. So it's not just on the first $150,000. If it's a $300,000 home, they could exempt the taxation on that $300,000 home.
Thank you.
However, I don't know all the legal ins and outs about what, you know, has happened, and I have no further concerns than that. But the only other thing I might say is that I hope that I'm not wrong here, but I don't think most municipalities have the ability to have wiggle room underneath a statute that the state has already passed. If we did, I think we'd wiggle them in many places.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Kathy?
Just
Senator Coghill.
Kathy, were you involved in listening to any of the debate of this particular proposal going before the people in Anchorage?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, no, I was not. It's difficult for me to keep up with just...
Thank you.
One community.
Senator Wilkowski.
Just trying to recall. My recollection is that didn't we just pass a legislation very similar to this? I thought it was Representative Gruenberg passed something just a few years ago, and that led to the muni ballot. Is that my recollection?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, the Fairbanks North Star Borough inserted an initiative on the ballot which allowed municipalities to grant exemptions in a more broad manner. I couldn't give you the exact language on that, but yeah, that was about 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Coghill,
just on that, I think the act that is under question under 050 was passed in 2008.
So. All right. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll go next to Susan Toe in Anchorage. Can you hear us, Susan?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Please identify yourself on the record and tell us what affiliation, if any, and give us your testimony.
My name is Susan Tao. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a recently retired Air Force. I have no affiliation. I'm testifying for myself. I'd like to thank you today for allowing me the time to testify regarding the inclusion of same-sex domestic partners into Senate Bill 73. I served 22 years of honorable service in the United States Air Force. 12 of those years were served while stationed here in the state of Alaska. During those 12 years, I deployed to support ongoing contingencies in Iraq and Afghanistan. My last deployment before I retired was as the superintendent of medical logistics. This tour lasted 12 months. 7 months out of that year, I traveled extensively throughout Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and UAE. Most of these travels were on the Black Hawk helicopters, or via ground support. I've been shot at, and I've pulled my weapon in self-defense. I was always armed, and my weapon was always locked and loaded. I've carried wounded soldiers, Marines, and airmen from the heliport pad in Balad into the ER for emergency treatment. I've spent nights in bunkers in Kabul and Kandahar, praying that the incoming bullets and missiles did not hit their intended targets. I stood on many Patriot details as our fallen brothers and sisters were loaded for their final transport back to their families. Through all of this, My thoughts were always with my family, my wife, and our two young sons. If I were to die, what would become of them? I knew we didn't have the same rights or benefits extended to many of my coworkers. As a recently retired senior NCO, I mentor many young gay and lesbian active duty members. Most of them have families. Many of them own property together here in Alaska. Many of them are raising children and have been in committed relationships for years. These airmen and soldiers are apt to deploy at any given time. They are in combat-related jobs, infantry, security forces, fighter pilots, crew chiefs, and combat medics. They are set to deploy and defend our country whenever asked. Their number one fear is that their families will not be taken care of should they not return from their mission. Senate Bill 73 is set to honor Alaska's fallen warriors and support widows and widowers of service members that are killed while on active duty. This must include our gay and lesbian military families. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. We're proud to have you amongst us, Senator Coghill. Do you have a question? Questions? All right. Thank you, Sergeant, and once again, thanks for your service. Now we'll go to Pat Carlson in Fairbanks. I understand you're the assessor for Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Carlson. I'm the Director of Assessing for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I'd also note that I'm a Vietnam-era veteran that attained the rank and honorable discharge as a first-class petty officer in the United States Coast Guard. So I come to this, you know, with a certain amount of compassion and sympathy and understanding of what folks go through. However, there's some relatively significant changes between the optional exemption as adopted by our jurisdiction, which allowed for three citizens to attain what we call the Irving Hernandez exemption for those that were killed in the line of fire. This is a mandatory exemption. It's not a local option. So we no longer have any authority to locally modify or bring it to a discussion before the citizens. It will become a fact and a matter of law that we will have to administer. And as currently been changed in the CS, it went from what was, in my opinion, a relatively small impact because it was only for residents that were 60 years or older, and it didn't have the direct or the language that I'm struggling with, which is the one that says basically had some impact from the military. Like in my own case, I swam around in lead-based paints and asbestos and all kinds of good stuff. So who knows how that's to be defined, the regs involved. In my opinion, this has the potential to dramatically increase not only those that would be using it, but there's no age limit. And there's also no ability for us locally to correct, modify, or at least define these terms. The original language as presented, again, was relatively limited exposure. This is dramatic. And to give a sense of our current impact, we have 716 disabled veterans under the mandatory exemption program in 030. That's about $100 million in assessed value, or about $1.5 million in revenues. There's the potential for this language to outstrip that by a factor of probably three. And that's because we have a large amount of personnel in town here. We have a lot of folks that pass away for a variety of reasons that could reasonably or arguably be attached to their military service. So our concern is that this is not a local option. It cannot be modified without further legislative action, and that it's an effect, as has been the senior citizen disabled veterans history and unfunded mandate, that does not allow the ability for those that are actually paying the bill to have some say in how it's administered and who the beneficiaries are. Again, fully support the concept, but I'm struggling because of the language in such a way that it dramatically increases our local liability with no participation in the outcome. And I'll answer any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Senator Wachowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I I'm curious about your statement that this is mandatory in the way I read this, and your other statement that this there's no age limit. And as I'm reading this, it says got to be 60 years or older. Actually, yeah, either 60 or 65, depending on if it's one or two. And then it says, looking at the CS, page 1, lines 10 through 14, a municipality may by ordinance approved by voters grant the exemption under this subsection. And then it says to a widow or widower under 60 years of age. So explain to me why you think there's no age limit and why this is mandatory, if you could, please.
Yeah, I apologize. I was reading from the original, not the CS, and you're correct. That does limit it to a large degree. But the reason it's mandatory is because it modifies 2945030E, which is mandatory language. That's not a local option. 050S, which was the Irving Hernandez bill, is a local option. So my understanding of the legislative or the legal construct, and I defer to legal attorneys for this, but because it's under mandatory, it's a thou shalt at our level to administer it consistent with the language in the act.
I don't really see it, but
Senator Coghill?
And it may be that what we'll have to do is to put an A and a B under sub E, because I think he's right. The may by ordinance approve is on line 11. But I think the second question is a good one, or a resident, and there's no age limit on the or resident. So on line 13, it could be under 60 years of age who qualifies under 2, which would be the disabled veteran, but it would be or a resident, which could be kicking it open to any resident, I think, of any age who is a widow or widower of a member under these conditions. So I think he's right on the second point, at least.
Good catch, Senator Coghill. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, sir. And can you stand by?
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right.
Thank you. We'll go to Steve Van Sant, State Assessor in Palmer. Are you on? Can you hear us, Steve?
Mr. Chairman, I can.
Yeah.
I'm available, Mr. Chairman, for questions. Just for the record, my name is Steve Van Sant. I'm the State Assessor with the State of Alaska and in Anchorage. Would like to make a couple of clarifications. One, I think Mr. Carlson's correct. The intent, as I understand it, of the CS was to remove the 60 years of age limitation, primarily because one of the reasons is that our military men and women today are much younger. We're not looking at those that served, in prior skirmishes. We're looking at those that are in the military today. So, as I understand it, it is not intended to affect those 60 years of age or over. So that is correct, and I think that was an intent by the sponsor. The second one is there is a difference between the one in 050S and the one in 030E. The one in 050S is more pointed. It is directly aimed at those who died while under in the line of duty, where the one under E now, if this bill passes, is more broad. I think they tighten it up a little bit. But before, on the original language, anybody serving in the military and got killed for any reason would be eligible for the exemption. Our estimation on statewide effect on taxes, we're estimating without opening up to a large number of individuals who get killed for any reason, before that amendment was made, in the neighborhood of less than a dozen statewide. So the impact was minimal. Now we're not sure. So I'm available for any other questions, sir.
Any other questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, explain what you mean when you said, so you're saying you thought this would apply to 12 people, now you're not sure if how many people would apply to? Is that my understanding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that's true. Right now, the way it's reading, it could apply to more people. I'm not sure how many it would affect at this point, though.
can you give Steve Dyson, can you give us just an order of magnitude? Do you think it would be hundreds or thousands?
Mr. Chairman, my guess is no. We're probably looking at less than 50 statewide. Although we have a lot of military here, we don't know how many of them died throughout time for any reason. So it's really difficult for us to estimate that impact at this time.
Yeah. Thank you. Senator Coghill.
I don't know how an assessor would look at this, but and maybe this belongs to a legal question, but if somebody dies because of illness while serving on active duty, that could probably amount to just about anybody who's on active duty. Is that how you would see that as an assessor?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, under the original language, while we were discussing it, it could have covered anybody, even in the military, were they to have an accident, let's say, at Alyeska and tumble down the mountain and get killed that way, it would even apply to them. So it would have opened the door substantially. I haven't seen the new CS where they've tightened up that language, so I'm not sure exactly how it reads. But I think they tightened it up somewhat. So at this point, we know that it will be a lot broader than the one under the optional exemption 050S. But to how much at this point, I just don't know.
Thank you. Steve, it's Dyson. When somebody applies for this, is it up to your office to sort through it and decide whether they qualify or not?
Mr. Chairman, no, sir. That's the local assessor that will make that determination. More than likely, what will happen is the Alaska Association of Assessing Officers will draft a standard so all municipalities handle it the same way. We've done that with the senior citizens and other exemption programs throughout the state, so there's consistency throughout the state. So we would have input into it, but it's not up to our office. It's up to the local assessor.
And so when you were in Anchorage, did you have to deal with a similar then?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. Through when we were dealing with the senior citizen exemption, we had the same issues, different problems, same issues, trying to determine the intent and the way the language read, trying to determine exactly how we were going to handle each one.
Yeah. I would assume that figuring out how old somebody is an awful lot easier than figuring out whether their death was caused directly or indirectly by combat exposure. Senator Wilkowski, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a zero fiscal note on this. It's probably actually just a very small fiscal note, right? Because if 50 people go into this, then that increases the mill rate, or that increases the property taxes that the state would have to pay on possibly some other areas, or is there still absolutely a zero fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there would be a zero fiscal note no matter the number. If it were 100,000, it would still be zero from the state's perspective because we are not funding that program at this time.
And if I could you refresh me, does the state pay property taxes to the muni, to local municipalities?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we wish that were so, but unfortunately that's not the case. No, the state does not pay any property tax.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments for Steve? Please stand by if you can for a bit, Steve. let's see. Jeff Mittman, ACLU, are you on board, Jeff?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska, and I thank the committee and the committee chair for the opportunity to briefly testify. We have previously provided written testimony to the members of the committee. I think very briefly, I think statements of the bill sponsor, the removing testimony of Sergeant Tao and simply the court record here in Alaska support a very minor amendment to the bill if the committee is to move it forward. As the bill sponsor stated, this is to protect our military families who are in need of additional assistance when they serve and if they are to lose their lives in service to our country. As Ms. Tao testified, Sergeant Tao testified, she was often in harm's way and knows of many other military service members who are in same-sex couple-led families who are often in harm's way. All that is necessary is to ensure that they are appropriately included. Whether or not we believe this is the right thing to do to honor their service, every court in the state of Alaska who has looked at this question has decided the question the same way. The trial court in Alaska, Civil Liberties Union versus Alaska, and the Supreme Court in that case, and the trial court in the recent case of Alaska v. Schmidt, Schmidt v. Alaska, which is currently on appeal before the Alaska Supreme Court, where we expect a similar ruling, have all stated that it is unconstitutional to exclude those families from benefits provided by the state. It is a very minor change, and again, in keeping with the honor that Alaska traditionally accords our service members, we would ask that the committee make that amendment and move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the change that you need, Jeff?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, simply to include, as currently written, the bill would provide these benefits to the widow or widower of spouses. As the committee is aware, under the Alaska Constitution, the marriages of same-sex couples are not recognized under Alaska law. So, as currently written, those families would be excluded from this benefit. Any change in the language that would recognize same-sex domestic partners or military families that are headed by individuals whose marriages were recognized in other states would bring those couples, as required by the Alaska Supreme Court, into the coverage.
That's line 12, page 2, I think. Questions for Mr. Mittman?
Just if I could,
Senator Wilkowski,
if there was a same-sex marriage that was recognized in another state, and then they moved to Alaska, and then the person died while on active duty, would that? How would the court interpret that? Do you think, or how would do you think the language as it's written would cover that?
To the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it would be our opinion that because currently the state of the law in the United States is that those states that choose not to recognize same-sex marriages, that state choice is honored. And because the Alaska state constitution has been amended to forbid recognition of same-sex couples, it is our interpretation that under the bill as currently drafted, for example, if a couple were married at West Point in New York where that marriage is legal and then moved to the state of Alaska, because Alaska law would govern this interpretation of this benefit, as currently written, that couple would not be protected.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Mittman. Anybody else here or online that wants to testify? Oh, yeah, right. Yes. Scott Ruby, Director of Community and Regional Affairs. Can you hear us, Scott?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, you've heard the discussion, I'm sure. Would you care to comment?
No, my comments would basically echo those of Steve Van Zandt, who works for our division also. I wasn't sure if he was going to be online.
All right. Any questions for Scott?
Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Well, we'll close. Senator Wilkowski.
Is there another attorney online that could maybe answer some of the questions that have come up? A question that I have is just bearing down a little bit into definition of active duty service, whether that applies to Guard members, if they're actually on active duty at that time or non-active duty, and also injury or illness and how we define that. I think that is a big, big issue. It was brought up by the assessor for Fairbanks and I think it would just be really good to build a little bit more of a record on that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and I think the question that Senator Coghill came up with as a result of the gentleman from Fairbanks on is when it says on page 1, line 13, or a resident, is there no age on that one? So is there anybody else from the Attorney General's office besides Rachel Witte online? Not so as you could notice it. All right. Take a brief at ease. Back on the record, it's a consensus of the committee that there's about at least four questions that we need to get answered from somebody in the Attorney General's office, and we'll get them to you quite quickly. And as soon as you can get answers for us, probably good to get an opinion from those folks, you know, in writing but previous to coming back. But we'd like to have them appear at the next meeting. And do you think you could do that by Tuesday's meeting?
Chair Dyson, yes.
All right, and then we'll bring it up under bills previously heard. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, just a couple other questions which came up. The way I read the language, it says it's a member of the Armed Forces of the United States who dies because of illness or injury suffered while serving on active duty service. And there was a question that was raised, does that include if it's a non-work related? I think the way it's written is that it's armed services related, but it seems a little bit broad to me. Another question I had was suicide, whether or not suicide would apply. Do you, you can ask an attorney about that. And then a little bit more of a definition on active duty service, I think, would be really helpful. And then just the whole issue of proportionality, whether or not it's 10% or if the widow has to prove that it was 50 plus one, or a little bit more definition on that would be really helpful.
And then, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Coghill.
Under 050, they actually tell the municipalities they must include requirements to determine eligibility. Maybe we need to take that language and put that in there if it fits. So let's kind of look at that as well.
Okay. And I missed whether my colleagues did, but the question on residency, the bottom lines on the first page, whether you want to be clear that the age thing on that.
Yes, Chair Dyson, that was actually one of the changes that we made in the CS was to remove the 60-year age limit. We want it to apply to any widow or widower.
Yeah. So why didn't you include it into the first section there? Anyways,
I'm not sure which section you're talking
about.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Anything further on this issue? All right. We'll move on then to the next order of business. I think that's our. All right. HCR 4, I think is a bill we previously, no, this is a new bill on the special recognition of among veterans. Who's going to present on this? Representative Ledoux.
Chair Dyson and members of the committee, my name is Gabrielle Ledoux. I represent District 13, which includes Muldoon, Creekside, and the Emmendorf portion of J-Bear. House Concurrent Resolution Number 4 would recognize and honor the Hmong veterans who fought in support of the United States military operation in the Kingdom of Laos between February 28, 1961 and May 15, 1975. This was called the Secret War, and it lasted for about 13 years. The Hmong fought bravely in this secret war and they suffered some of the greatest casualty rates. Their casualty rates were five times that of American servicemen. After the United States departed, the Hmong suffered greatly because of their support of the United States. The government, the regime in Laos, engaged in ethnic cleansing, and about 300,000 of them died. They also used chemical weapons. Yellow rain were used to target the civilian population, and 46,000 of them were put into re-education camps. Many of these people who fought so bravely for us ended up in refugee camps until they could be resettled. The conditions there were absolutely awful. The most recent numbers set the U.S. Hmong population between 200,000 and 300,000, with the Alaska population 4,700 and rising. The secret war is no longer a secret, and I would ask for recognition of the Hmong veterans in this resolution. I have with me my chief of staff, Dirk Moffett, and he'll try to answer any questions that I can't answer.
Dirk?
Through the chair, Representative Dyson, we also have some members of the Hmong community that represent the veterans organizations that could also answer questions.
Any questions for the sponsor? All right. Is there any particular order that you would want us to hear from these folks? All right. Go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, whichever order that the chair would like.
All right. Charlie Mao in Sacramento.
Yes.
Are you there, Charlie?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you, sir, and thanks for your service. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Charlie Moore, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, Moore, M-O-U-A. I am the president of the United States Special Guerrilla Unit, Vietnam Veteran Incorporated in the state of California. We have other chapter organizations, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. I thank you, the president, and thank you, your honor, for giving me this opportunity. I am a former liaison officer of the United States Liaison Officer in Laos. I forward a guide for the B-52 and JAG bomber fighter, and I work with the United States Special Forces to guide the battalion commander directly to the war, the field battle zone. I joined the U.S. military or the U.S. Special, we call the HEU, since 1963-73. Here are the statement that what happened, and we are so happy to serve on the United States. One, in preparation, this is the very beginning of the war in 1960. In preparation for possible United States military intervention in Laos, the Joint Chief ordered the emergency mobilization of a task force at the Subic Base in Philippines on New Year's Day, 1960. The American warship left port and headed north. At the same time, President Eisenhower was looking for a way to stabilize the situation in Laos without having to introduce American troops into the conflict. He therefore will, with the favor of a CIA proposal to arm and train Hmong tribesmen to fight against the communist troops in Laos in place of any United States armed forces. Where the 68th ethnic group in Laos strongly fought the North Vietnamese communists side by side with the United States from 1960 to 75 in defense of freedom, democracy, and liberty under the command of five United States presidents, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard M. Nixon, and Gerald R. Ford. As the former CIA director Richard Hume has pointed out, the appropriations subcommittee that provides funds for the war in Laos were briefed regularly. Also, U.S. Senators Stuart Simonson and other congressmen visited Laos and gave every indication that they approved for what happened. They believe him. Congress, Hume noted that it was a much cheaper and better way to fight a war in Laos than communist American troops. The special guerrilla unit in Laos was the United States' largest paramilitary operation ever undertaken by the Central Intelligence Agency. For more than 13 years, the agency directed native forces that fought major North Vietnamese military units to stand still. Although the country of Laos eventually fell to the communists, the CIA remained proud of its accomplishment there. Director of Central Intelligence, DCI, Richard Hume, later observed, "It was a major operation for the agency. It took manpower. It took special qualified manpower. It was dangerous. It was difficult. The CIA, he contended, did a superb job." It allowed the United States installs top secret equipment at the Site 84 to control the B-52 and Jack bombers along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, built a secret air base for American aircraft and the HEU forces at the Lima Site 28, and assigned HEU forces to protect these and other U.S. assets, U.S. and U.S. special liaison officers actively directed the HEU forces at the battlefield operation, guiding American airstrike, engaged in the retrieval of a downed pilot, and helped to reclaim the remains of a kill in action, KIA, commando lost in battle against communist troops.
Charlie, excuse me, this is Chairman. I think many of us are acquainted with a historic and brave role that the Hmong people played in Southeast Asia. And this bill pass, or resolution passing, is going to set aside a time for us to recognize those veterans and to inform the public about both the heroic role and the suffering of the Hmong people. I've got kind of a tactical decision here. We're going to run out of time. I'm quite sure this is going to pass our committee, but I do not. I want to honor you and your service. But the practical thing is, if we let you go ahead and do the documenting of the actions, we'll run out of time and hold up this piece of legislation that is designed to honor people like you. And also, I have seven other Hmong veterans who are here wanting to testify. So I'll leave it to your choice, sir. But if
It probably would help the process if you'd summarize and let us go on to the other folks who want to testify.
Yeah, I will fax this one to you later on. So what my testimony today, we and the United States fall on the same side for the one purposes, and this is for freedom and free choice. And we thank you for the United States for supporting us and taking us to the United States. And we all are citizens of the United States. And I just want to see if we could get a recognized or by some other choice so to receive the same equal, just like any other Vietnam veteran. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Charlie? All right. Sure. We have, I believe, seven people in Anchorage. Can you hear us?
Yes, we hear you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you. So you probably heard my comments to Charlie, and we certainly appreciate your service to our country and the cause of freedom. It would be most efficient if you all could pick one or two people from the group that are there to speak for all of you, or we can go through the list and let everybody speak for 2 minutes. I'll let you all decide that, and so I'll give you a minute or two here to make that decision, and we'll stand at ease. We're at ease. Anchorage LIO, have you all made a decision?
Yes.
All right. Please proceed and give us your testimony in whatever order you choose, and please identify yourself by name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Diamond and members of the committee. My name is Arthur Yang. I am one of the advisor for the SGU branch in Alaska. And I thank you for the opportunity for this testify. I'm here to support the HCR-4. That's all I have to say, Your Honor.
Well, and other folks there that want to testify, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, for Honor Chairman. My name is Pastor Lee. And I would like to thank you for Mr. Ledo's Gabriel. And you want to introduce for the bill HCR-4 for about for the Hmong veteran. So now we have to be here. A lot of people, seven people be here. We all have to come together for the support for the your HCR-4 to pass.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lee. I happen to represent Eagle River as Chair Dyson, and more Hmong people are moving into our community, and if indeed you all could facilitate me meeting them, I'd appreciate it. I have just a personal question. I've always felt when the U.S. pulled out of Vietnam in the middle 70s that you all were abandoned and betrayed in some way. If that's true, how did you ever get past the anger and resentment and decide you wanted to come and live in the country that betrayed you?
Mr. Chair, my name is Arthur Yang. To answer that question, because we at the Hmong SGU work under the U.S. Armed Forces in Laos, and if we are not leaving the country, then we will have no life because we will be executed by the communists, and that's why we are decide to out of the country to the third country.
Thank you. Well, thank you for choosing our country. Any questions or comments in the committee? I think, I would enjoy a chance to meet with the community sometime. Particularly the ones in south central Alaska, if you can make that work, I'd appreciate it, Arthur. All right. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Concurrent Resolution Version 28-LS0504-U from this committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Objection? Seeing none, HCR 4 is passed, and we will take a brief ease, and I'd like whoever is going to be presenting on SB 45 to come to the table, please. Back on the record, before us is Senate Bill 45. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Hi. Through the chair, Genevieve Watusik, staff to Senator McGuire. She's currently in another meeting and has asked me to testify in her place. Thank you for hearing SB 45 through the chair, an act setting special registration fees for alternative fuel vehicles and providing for an effective date. And I'm here for any questions. And I just, Ken just passed out an article by GM. Last time, Senator Giesel had asked about how it affects cold weather, alternative vehicle fuels. And so it's just an article on that because she had a question on it.
All right. Thank you. There were some questions that came up during the previous hearing on this bill. What were those and what are they? What have you found out?
The biggest question was on the fiscal note. The last year's fiscal note was much lower; it was $20,000, and this year's it was much higher; it was over $100,000. And the committee wasn't sure whether it made a difference, since there's not that many alternative fuel vehicles right now in Alaska. And we're hoping that this will help increase people to buy more of these vehicles. But the members were worried about how high the fiscal note was, and. Ken from your office has drafted a new fiscal note reflecting last year's instead of this year's.
Yep.
Hi, Curtis Thayer, representing the Department of Administration and the Division of Motor Vehicles. And we had submitted a fiscal note on February 22nd that this would be approximately $110,000 in the first year and $25,000 in successive years. And we stand by that fiscal note. We were unaware of the committee's desire to change the fiscal note until we saw it on the table out front.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we didn't wait till the last minute, about an hour and a half ago or so. Ken Truitt, our committee aide, was online, and he found a site where, if you want to know what the VIN says, all you got to do is go to that site, and they do it for nothing. But I have a technical question. If someone, this bill is not going to force you to look at every VIN number in the state, is it?
What the VIN number will do is it would require us to look to see who qualifies. And where in the past everybody knew a Toyota Prius was a hybrid vehicle, now a Ford Escape makes a gas version and they make a hybrid version. So unless we have the vehicle show up at Division of Motor Vehicles and pop the hood, which is going to take staff time and be inconvenient for the customer. There are programming out there that is done through, then we had talked with the Motor Vehicle Administrators of America, and there's technology out there where we can run the VIN number and immediately know what type of vehicle that is, and that's what we're proposing. The $110,000 was to buy the program, and then the $25,000 was the subscription. Now, again, one thing is there's multiple vendors, and we would have to go out for procurement for this, and so we would hope this is on the high side. But it's not the $20,000, is because we're actually buying a program, because as more automobile dealers go to hybrid vehicles, it is harder and harder to track the VIN numbers, knowing by the name or the type of car it is, unless you actually have a VIN number that decodes it. what is a hybrid vehicle.
Yeah. So you answered my question kind of sideways. The answer is, I ask, you got to look at every VIN number in the state. And by implication, your answer is no. The people who want this exemption will identify their specific vehicle, and on the paperwork will be the VIN number.
Correct.
And so all you need to do is interact either with the manufacturers or have the manufacturer tell you these are the ones that are alternative fuel, or I suspect there, you must mean that there's a identifier in the VIN number that tells you if it's a alternative fuel vehicle.
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, yes there is. And it's just a program to decipher that VIN number, and we could process it immediately. And of course, we're talking statewide, so it'll be available to all the offices.
Yeah. All right. Questions or comments from the committee? Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chair, I know we have inflation and everything, but the fiscal note from 2 years ago was $20,000 for the first year and then no cost thereafter. And then in this fiscal note now, you've got $110,000 in the first year and $25,000 every year thereafter. And if this is just about VINs, you can go online and find VINs. I know we're all trying to cut back on money. It's not a huge amount of money. I support the bill. I just think the fiscal note is extremely high for what we're getting, and it's just not justified in my opinion, Mr. Chair.
Well, I am sure that, but as Mr. Thayer just said, that was the high limit, and it may very well be, and I suspect they've not spent a lot of time exploring it. Off the record. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe it's Genevieve who will probably be equipped to answer this. I'm kind of confused. I'm looking at line 6, and it says a $20 biennial registration fee is imposed. And then on line 9, instead of the otherwise appropriate annual registration fee, a $10 annual registration fee is imposed on a qualified alternative fuel vehicle. So $20 biennial, $10 annual, isn't that the same?
Through the chair, yes it is. I think that might have just been how they drafted it, but it is $10 a year or $20 biannually.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Discussion?
And through the chair, Hal Lennox from GM is online, and he's dealt with this issue in many states, if you'd like to hear from him as well.
All right. Howard Lennox, Sacramento, representing General Motors. Are you online, sir?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Yes. Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Hal Lennox, and I'm with General Motors. I serve as the Regional Director for Government Affairs for the Western Region, of which Alaska is a portion. Thank you for allowing me the time to appear before you telephonically this morning. I appear before you in support of Senate Bill 45. As you've heard, the bill allows for a $20 biennial registration fee on qualified alternative fuel vehicles, including CNG, LNG, as well as pure electric and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. Dependence on foreign oil has been a national security concern for this country for many, many years, and nowhere is that better understood than on the last frontier, where Alaska and her citizens have long made substantial contributions towards our nation's energy independence. Automobile and truck manufacturers, too, understand the importance of this strategic imperative, and we embrace our role towards that end. For instance, in General Motors' lineup, we have the Savannah CNG van, Silverado and Sierra bi-fuel CNG pickups, the Volt, Chevrolet Volt and Cadillac ELR plug-in hybrids, and the Chevrolet Spark, which is a battery electric vehicle. That experience, as well as all of our peers in the OEM community in building these alternative fuel vehicles, have helped us to come to understand that due to their costs, a critical component of early adoption for these vehicles is the need to encourage consumers to take action in the marketplace. And numerous independent studies have confirmed the importance of incentives to alternative fuel vehicle adoption. Senate Bill 45 provides such encouragement in Alaska by reducing the vehicle registration fee, as you've already heard. An important aspect of the bill is that it does not pick winners or losers from a technology perspective. Whether the consumer elects to purchase a vehicle that burns natural gas in one of its states or instead chooses to power their vehicle by grid electricity produced by natural gas or some other energy source, the incentive remains the same. GM supports and applauds efforts that are technology agnostic. By adopting Senate Bill 45, Alaska will join 30 of her sister states in implementing some form of incentive for alternative fuel vehicles, and in doing so, make yet another important contribution towards achieving energy independence. Senator Dyson, I'd like to take a moment to thank Senator McGuire for authoring this important legislation and to thank you and your committee for your thoughtful consideration. I'd be happy to take your questions.
Questions for Howard? Howard, Chair Dyson, Senator Giesel and I have been working on some of these alternative fuel things, particularly CNG, LNG. Offline, I would appreciate if you would forward to me or us or McGuire's office kind of a list of all of the incentives that other jurisdictions have done. I know there's high-volume traffic lanes, permits, special parking places, and a few other things like that. And but anyways, if you would do that, and then just for me personally, I'd enjoy you all's analysis of where you think the hydrogen fuel thing is going. And but that's just my own personal interest. I happen to be a mechanical engineer and a certified car freak. But anyways, thanks for your testimony and what your company is doing. Any other questions, comments? First consideration for us is, do we want to amend or substitute the fiscal notes? Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chair, I misunderstood your question a moment ago. I thought your question was, are there any more questions for the gentleman from GM? I do have more questions, but not for him.
All right. Thank you. Senator Giesel.
All right. My question, I believe, is for Mr. Thayer. The fiscal note doesn't address the lost revenues from this reduced registration fees for these vehicles. There must be a fiscal impact for that.
With that, this process, until we have, it's kind of indeterminate for us until we actually know how many vehicles this is going to be in the successive years in doing, in having, it was indeterminate on the fiscal note to determine what it would be, and it was not necessarily have a negative fiscal note.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
I'm just looking at your fiscal note on page 2. It says, as referenced, there are currently 2,301 strictly hybrid vehicles registered. So it sounds like there is some quantity that could be construed for a fiscal note, but you didn't. What is the typical registration for a vehicle?
Depending on the vehicle, the vehicle tax is normally, you know, in the 50-60, but what you have is you have the MVRT, which is the motor vehicle tax that communities put on it, and that can vary. That is larger than the registration of the vehicle itself. It's depending on the tax. Some communities tax up to $100, some do a minimum of $18. So there's a loss to DMV, but there's also, which isn't a loss to the state, but there is a difference that would be with the communities because they wouldn't have the ability to collect as much tax.
So just for clarification, you're saying then the local communities would lose revenue with this legislation?
It depends on the registration, and that's something we can quantify. We're trying to quantify the cost to the division as far as administering the program. We ourselves don't necessarily have a position on the bill and would probably lean to supporting the bill. The department would. It's just the fiscal note as far as the cost of the DMV was our concern.
Thank you.
Follow up, Senator Giesel.
Well, it's not actually a question. Perhaps it is. Yes, I bet Genevieve can answer this question. These are typically rather expensive cars, has been my observation. I certainly can't afford one myself. What is the average cost for them?
Through the chair, I am not quite sure of that. Hal Lennox might know that, or the DMV might as well online.
Dyson, the cheapest ones, I think, are in the $20,000 to $30,000 range, and you can spend up to about $750,000 for the Fisker. But my guess is that most of them are in the $25,000 to $55,000 range.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make an observation. It seems to me that this reduction in registration fee is going to benefit folks who are rather affluent versus the high school kid who is buying his first car, which is likely a used vehicle, which will likely not be one of these high-end experimental cars.
Irrefutable logic.
Simply an observation, Mr. Chair, and a concern.
Yeah, it is a policy call whether or not this really minor change in is going to affect anybody's buying habits. I would be very surprised if it did. But it does send a signal that we, the state, are wanting to do the things within our purview to encourage it. That's a policy call. And But the reality, I don't believe anybody's buying habits are going to be changed by it at all. The question before us, do we amend the fiscal note? And it does go to finance, and we can amend it, and they can change if it needs to be discussion.
Mr. Chair, I don't know enough about how this works or not, but I'm just looking at last year's fiscal note compared to this year's. Last year's fiscal note, the estimated number of hours to program this was 140. This year it's gone up to 250. We've got VIN decoding software. I mean, I can't imagine there are that many of these vehicles out there that you couldn't just have someone plug them in. I don't know why you need this expensive software with the annual subscription cost of $25,000. So that's the thing that concerns me. I agree with you. It's a policy call. You want to encourage this type of thing. It probably doesn't affect buying habits. I just don't want the state to be upside down on an issue like this where we're paying out tens of thousands of dollars and probably not getting much in return. But I support the bill. I'd like to do it for much less money than what's being proposed.
Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chair, I suggest we turf this to the Finance Committee, whose role it is to evaluate fiscal notes and make those determinations.
I won't object to moving, right. Mr. Chair.
All right, then it would be my intention to write a cover letter that goes with it to discuss these very things, and I'll run it by both of you before I send it on up to finance. I would encourage you to sit there. It looks like, from a cursory look online, that there are services out there that all you got to do is submit the VIN to them and they'll feed you back the information. Who knows how secure and how accurate and how approved by the manufacturers are. But when you're before the Finance Committee with this, it might be wise for you, to have at least had a cursory look at that, because I suspect that question will come up. Any closing comments?
Thank
all right. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 45, version 28, LS0411/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes from the Department of Administration.
Any objection? Seeing none, the bill passes with individual recommendations. Thank you.